Thank you for tuning in to the Helium Radio Network. You are listening to a rebroadcast of a previously recorded show.
The victims of gun violence. There are so many untold stories there. You know, we often focus on mass shootings and so on, but, you know, day in and day out, people in different communities are suffering because of firearm injury or gun violence. And I think it's critical that we continue to tell those stories.
That's Dr. Chetan Sathia, Director of Northwell Health's Center for Gun Violence Prevention. And this is Healthcare Confidential. I'm your host, Teresa Jacob Ellis. Each week, we bring innovators and experts together to discuss the American healthcare system. Gun violence is a leading cause of premature death in the United States, killing more than 38,000 people and causing 85,000 injuries each year. In the last 72 hours alone, there were more than 250 shootings, resulting in 99 deaths and 174 injuries. Dr. Sathia is a pediatric trauma surgeon and National Institutes of Health-funded firearm injury prevention researcher, as well as a powerful voice and advocate for firearm injury prevention. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Sathia, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Can you begin by telling us a little bit more about yourself? I truncated your bio into just a few lines, but in addition to your clinical work and advocacy around gun violence prevention, you're also a journalist with bylines in top-tier publications, and you have training in epidemiology. So how does that all come together around the issue of gun violence for you?
Of course. So, you know, I'm originally Canadian, and I came to the United States about 3 years ago and started some of my specialty pediatric surgery training in Chicago. And that's really where I had the eye-opening experience firsthand of pulling bullets out of children and babies day in and day out. And this is really an issue that's very dear to my heart. You know, very quickly, firearm injuries become, unfortunately, the majority of what you do as a trauma surgeon. And it becomes tiring to tell parents over and over again that they've lost their child because of a largely preventable disease. So that really kind of skyrocketed my passion for this area. And before that, I did a lot of my training in Toronto, where I also experienced a lot of firearm injury. So this was something that I was very involved in, not only in an advocacy realm, but a research realm, both nationally in Canada and the United States. And when I got here, it just kind of took off. So when I got to Northwell about a year ago, it timed very nicely with our CEO, Michael Dowling, taking a stance on this issue. And by doing so, he was one of the very few healthcare executives across the country that was willing to stick their neck out and kind of say enough is enough with respect to gun violence prevention. And that reverberated across the healthcare industry. What we see across the country is many, many healthcare workers, physicians taking a stance on this issue, but very few healthcare executives actually willing to kind of delve in. So what Michael Dowling did was really provide us healthcare workers the opportunity to have that top-down buy-in we need to take on this issue firsthand. So at Northwell, that led to the development of the Center for Gun Violence Prevention, which I direct, as well as giving us the opportunity to obtain a significant NIH grant around this issue. And really, I think Northwell Health has kind of emerged as a catalyst for the healthcare industry on this topic.
How did that become a priority for Northwell? Do you know what the thinking was that led to that decision?
He, you know, I think it's always been from speaking with Michael Dowling and you know, for Northwell Health, social determinants of health, community health has always been a focus of theirs, and this has been such an important element of that when it comes to, you know, firearm safety, but also gun violence risk itself. So I think this has always been something that Northwell has been interested in. And I think it was just the right time. You know, our country has come to a breaking point. This has always been one of our chief public health crises, but it's now worse than it ever has been. And I think there was a real need to come out and take a stand on this.
So you referenced just a moment ago the NIH grant that you are involved in to study gun violence prevention. What will that study involve? What kind of work will you be doing with that grant?
That study is actually going to be the first of its kind implementation study geared towards universal screening and intervention among patients for firearm injury risk and gun violence risk. So what that means is that We are going to ask patients who come into our emergency departments questions related to firearm safety. To be very clear, this is not about the Second Amendment. This is not about gun ownership. This has nothing to do with gun control. This is purely about firearm safety and assessing gun violence risk. So this kind of ambitious program where we ask every patient these questions as part of usual care has never been rolled out in the country. So that is really what this project is trying to do. It's an ambitious goal, but we feel that Northwell is uniquely positioned to do so because they have done similar things around substance use. And again, when a patient comes in, really this is a confidential discussion. The questions around firearm access and gun violence risk are being asked no different than we ask other injury prevention questions, such as, you know, do you wear a seatbelt? You know, substance use questions. It's going to be lumped into those same questions. And the goal there, again, is just to educate about firearm safety and to prevent future firearm injury.
So in order to educate those patients about firearm safety, you have a monumental task of educating your clinicians first, right? So what does that look like?
Yes, absolutely. So that is first and foremost the most important element of this. One thing we know over the last many decades is that very few physicians are comfortable to ask questions related to firearm safety, let alone counsel about it. And for decades, that number hasn't changed. The vast majority of healthcare providers just don't ask the question. There's a multitude of reasons for that, many barriers, many of which we hope to elucidate from our research. However, to your point, the education is critical. So that is very much the stage we are in for this grant at this point. We are finalizing the education. We are educating our workforce about the epidemiology of gun violence, our focus on firearm safety, not the politics of this issue, just firearm safety. And then, you know, empowering our healthcare workforce to be able to ask the right questions and to counsel in the appropriate way, and to really, you know, do so in a non-judgmental way that works with patients very nicely. We know from studies that the vast majority of patients actually want to be asked questions related to firearm safety. You know, patients understand that it's important for their own safety and for the safety of children in their household, so they want these questions asked. And I think, you know, there's a real nice way to do that through education.
So I noticed that you're using two terms, firearm safety and gun violence prevention. And I'm wondering if those are the same thing or if those are different concepts that maybe complement one another.
That's a great question. So this is often, you know, an area of confusion for many and something we ourselves are working through. I think it's very important to make the distinction between the two. In many ways, they are complementary, but different. So, you know, firearm safety, which is a big focus of what we are doing, really is referring to safe storage of weapons in the household. You know, storing ammunition separately, storing your weapons locked and unloaded. That's the focus there, to really prevent homicide, suicide, and accidental injury in the household. Then you have a separate cohort, which is gun violence risk, right? Which is really, has similarities, but is also different, which is more geared towards violence in general in at-risk communities, and would require resources such as working with community-based organizations, violence interruption programs, and other referrals as needed for coexisting conditions. So I think the distinction is very important, and we are hoping to address both in this study.
And something I want to pick up on that you just said in that answer, which is there are multiple categories when we talk about gun deaths, right? There are violent acts, there are suicides, accidental deaths and injuries, defensive use situations. So are you focused on all of those areas, or are there certain ones that are more of a priority for you at the health system?
You know, those are all a priority for us. This is a very broad issue. And by asking everybody these questions, we are going to broadly approach this and start kind of from scratch. Because one important element here is that there has been a decades-long ban on really funding for research around firearm injury prevention. So in many ways, we really don't know what the right thing to do is. We don't know necessarily what the best way to ask the questions is, what the best way to offer counseling is. And that is part of this research study. So we have to start broad to answer those questions kind of from scratch.
And you also alluded to the fact that you are not taking a political approach to this, although it has become a political flashpoint in this country. Northwell Health and you have taken a public health approach rather than a political approach. But how do you balance that? Because there are still people who want to politicize this issue.
Absolutely. And I think the best way to balance that is to continue to educate and to make it very clear over and over again that this, in our minds, is not a political issue. This is not about gun control, you know, not about the Second Amendment. This is not about actually limiting weapons. This is just about asking about access so that we can offer safety counseling and then assessing gun violence risk. And I think the more we make that clear right away, the better off we're going to be. We also, importantly, would note that responsible gun owners are a big part of the education we're rolling out and a big part of the process. So we're very much engaging them every step of the way in all the initiatives we do, because the large majority of firearm owners are very responsible and want to be engaged in this firearm safety education.
I want to talk a little bit about, you know, your specialty as a pediatric surgeon certainly gives you a unique perspective that you bring to this work. On Valentine's Day, just a couple of weeks ago, our nation marked the 3-year anniversary of the Parkland school shooting in Florida, in which 17 people were killed, 14 of them high school students. Just 2 months earlier, on December 14th, we marked 8 years since Sandy Hook, which resulted in 26 deaths, and tragically, 20 of those were 6- and 7-year-old children. So as a pediatric surgeon, you've seen the firsthand effects, as you mentioned, of gun violence on children. Are children at particular risk, or do we just sort of focus on these tragedies more so than others?
Yeah, you know, we tend to focus on the mass shootings, right? And you know, they're absolutely heart-wrenching. I mean, as a pediatric surgeon, seeing children who are injured by bullets, you know, innocent children who are often hit with stray bullets, it's just heartbreaking. And it is a very powerful image and powerful message as to the devastation that bullets can cause. But to your point, you know, mass shootings do not make up the majority of firearm injuries in this country, right? The majority is based on, you know, handgun injuries in the community or accidental injuries in the home. And that's why I think it's important to really touch on all these aspects. You know, one part of the focus is children, but that's only one part of the pie. This really affects all different ages. You know, our grant is also looking at, for example, the elderly and those with dementia who are also at increased risk, not only of suicide, but of accidental injury in the home. So, you know, this really affects all spectrums, all different ethnic variations as well. And we need to address those appropriately.
What are the trends telling us? Are we seeing the problem worsen? Is it getting better? Or is it difficult to kind of predict?
I would say, you know, one thing we know is that it has not gotten better. Years and years has not gotten better. It has been, you know, very much so one of our chief public health crises. And of course, during COVID, that got worse. You know, I think it's multifactorial. It's hard to pinpoint what the real cause of that is, but gun violence has gone up. Firearm injuries have gone up. We know that from studies that have shown us some of the stats. But again, that is multifactorial. Violence in many areas has gone up. So I don't want to just focus on gun violence, but it's absolutely becoming a bigger and bigger issue. And importantly to note, we do know that during COVID, many more Americans purchased weapons and firearms, and many of whom are first-time gun owners. So firearm safety education is even more important at this stage.
Absolutely. So at the Center for Gun Violence Prevention, you're really taking a national leadership role. Yet gun laws vary from state to state. So is this something that requires more of a regional approach to addressing some of these issues, or do you feel that a national approach is more appropriate?
I would say both. You know, just to emphasize, our center is, you know, we're a year into this, you know, so we're very much new to this as well. And I'll touch on that a little bit later, but we have been learning from many, many hospitals across the country who are doing amazing work and teaching us what the best strategy is. So this is very much a collective effort. And we have some national strategies, and then the bulk of what we do is regional, state-based, city-based. And I think, you know, we have work groups around education, community engagement, research, and policy. And I do think that local regional element is the most important. That's one of the advantages of also a health system like ours. We're very much integrated into the community. So we hope to be able to include this as an integrated approach at the community level. So a lot of what we are doing is working with community-based organizations, religious organizations, schools, to figure out how we can really help rather than replicate what's already being done. And then we have the national element as well, where we personally really have the ability to learn from others. You know, we launched a national learning collaborative for hospitals and health systems around gun violence prevention just last month. And that is really the first of its kind national sustained dialogue around this issue. We have some of the biggest health systems and hospitals in the country signed up. That's going to be a multi-year, multi-phase learning collaborative. We're going to learn about gun violence prevention from one another, right? Like we have a lot to learn, for example, from folks in Baltimore who have really rolled out exceptional community-based violence intervention programs. And then at the end of that year, develop best practices and actually pledge as a healthcare industry to implement those best practices. So that's going to be an action-oriented collaborative. So that's an example of a national strategy, but then we also have a large focus regionally.
And is it possible or advisable to separate gun violence from other types of violence, from perhaps domestic violence, for example, or are those very intertwined issues?
Yes and no. I mean, having a gun in the household when it comes to domestic violence is a big issue. So they are very much intertwined in that if you counsel around gun safety, if you educate patients about certain temporary restriction orders such as ERPO laws or the New York Safe Act, it might empower them to be able to get the resources to remove weapons from the household temporarily for family members who they might be worried about. You know, if there are those resources that exist that we can also help to educate about, right? If you have a family member that you're worried about, you do have means to just temporarily protect them. But at the same time, domestic violence has its own issues. So I would say yes and no.
Well, it's time for us to take a very brief break, but don't go anywhere because we will be right back with more of this conversation about gun violence prevention as a public health initiative with Dr. Chetan Sathya. Don't go away. What lies ahead for providers in our new post-COVID healthcare world? Find out at the 5th annual Toolkit for Independence event, going virtual for the first time this year. Save your spot for Thursday, March 25th from 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You'll hear from expert speakers, participate in workshops, and browse vendor displays showcasing products and services to help you thrive in 2021 and beyond. It's free for physicians and office managers. A limited number of sponsorships and exhibitor spots are available. For additional information, call 631-606-0525. That's 631-606-0525. Welcome back to Healthcare Confidential. We're here with Dr. Chetan Sathya, Director of Northwell Health's Center for Gun Violence Prevention. Dr. Sathya, I wanted to ask you if you've already identified any strategies that you believe will be effective in reducing gun violence.
Great question. So, you know, part of the research that we're doing will be to really evaluate some strategies that we and others think are effective. To my point earlier, because of the lack of research that's been done with respect to firearm injury prevention, we're not, you know, we don't have as robust data as we'd like as to the effectiveness of many strategies, but we do have enough to say that there are evidence-informed strategies we can use. So, for example, as part of the study and our screening, once we identify patients who are at risk of firearm injury, we do intend to institute certain strategies. That's going to include a brief intervention with a health coach around some motivational interviewing, educating patients about the 5 L's of firearm safety. You know, making sure they're a learned owner, that they lock their weapons, and so on. We're also going to provide resources such as firearm safety courses, give gun locks to patients as well, so that can aid in helping them store their weapons. And then for those who are at risk of community violent risk, you know, we're going to be working with violence interruption programs. We're actually going to come into our EDs as credible messengers and work with those folks to kind of provide longitudinal follow-up in the community.
This is a really multi-layered approach. You've got a lot of different areas that you're focusing on, from the microcosm, from the patient, individual patient level, to these collaborations and larger initiatives. Can you talk a little bit about the forum, the annual forum that you recently sponsored, and that what your vision is for that going forward?
Yeah, so that is, you know, that forum that Northwell kind of put on was really first came about in December 2019. And that was really where Michael Dowling made the call to action to the healthcare industry. And like I said, it was a very powerful in-person forum. The focus there was how do we approach firearm injury mortality prevention as a public health issue? We heard from academics, policymakers, physicians, and it was a really powerful kickoff to this whole debate. Since then, Northwell has been putting on an annual forum. We had one just last year, again, December 2020, that focused again on the public health aspect of this, but also had elements of cross-sector advocacy, which is very important in this debate, Had some folks from policy, Michael Bloomberg spoke, Gabby Gifford spoke, Senator Murphy spoke, and it was a nice coming together on this issue of how healthcare can work with other sectors as well to really be effective in this debate, because this very much requires everybody to get on board. You know, we can do what we can within our lane in healthcare, which I think, you know, is very, very powerful here because this is really a public health issue. But others also need to really weigh in and are critical elements of this issue.
I know that this is, it's very important for you to separate the public health aspects of this from the politics of this. But as you pointed out, it's difficult to do. And there are so many different factors that are contributing to this epidemic in our country. And I was just thinking, you know, this week there was a picture in the media of an elected official, Lauren Boebert of Colorado, posing in front of a collection of assault weapons. And a couple of weeks earlier, she was boasting about carrying her Glock to Congress. What do you think of when you hear and see things like that?
You know, it's seeing that does directly play into our fears that, you know, this is really a firearm safety issue, and seeing folks kind of flaunt weapons loaded, unlocked, makes us worried about others in the household, because that is one of our primary concerns as pediatric specialists. And, you know, just to emphasize again for a third time, yeah, this is not about gun control, not about the Second Amendment. But in the spirit of firearm safety, of course, you know, one of the main focuses here is that we don't want weapons stored like that, because you never know. We have seen over and over again more and more accidental injuries in the home, right? We constantly hear stories about a five-year-old accidentally shooting a two-year-old, or someone who might have mental health issues grabbing one of those weapons and performing a mass shooting, or someone who's suicidal having easy access to the weapon, you know? So in the spirit of safety and injury prevention, that's very hard for us to see. And all we can do is continue to educate and work with others to kind of make that a rarity. And I do think that, you know, I know the situation you're talking about, and I'll emphasize again that the majority of gun owners are extremely responsible and would never store their weapons in that fashion.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you mentioned earlier that you are a Canadian by birth. Here in the U.S., we seem to have a fascination and almost an obsession with guns that I don't think really exists in many other developed nations. So, you know, our movies, our video games, our television shows all kind of glamorize gun culture. Why do you think that is? And do you think that it's essential to kind of try to change that culture as part of this effort that you're involved in?
It's a tough question, Teresa. a lot of layers there. But, you know, what I will say is, I really mean it when I say that most gun owners are very responsible. I mean, if you are owning a gun, you want to be safe, right? Not only for those in your household, but for others. So I think, unfortunately, one of the things that happens with, you know, social media and viral videos and so on right now is that we fixate on the vast minority who, you know, might take this to the next level. And that's on both sides, the political debate. When it comes to gun culture, you know, that is not our goal as physicians or in the healthcare lane. We are not intending to necessarily change that, because, again, I do think that there are so many people who advocate for firearm safety on both sides of the political spectrum. We're just here to, you know, to really say that we want to ask these questions in the spirit of safety, and we think that that can make a difference. We know that can make a difference, and that's kind of what I would focus on. I think, you know, the cultural debate is just multifactorial and also stems from, you know, elements of the Constitution and so on that are very unique to America versus other countries. So I think it's hard to make a comparison between Canada and the US, for example.
So what is it about this issue that makes it a public health issue?
Well, it still, you know, continues to be one of the largest leading causes of preventable death in all age categories, particularly youth. And that hasn't changed. When you look at causes of death and morbidity across the country, I mean, firearm injury continues to be one of the top causes, always, every year. So this is a public health issue. I mean, you know, we used to talk about tobacco like this decades ago. It was taboo for physicians to ask the question. No one thought it was a health issue. But once they started asking the question as part of usual care, things changed. People started to understand that this was a problem and that simple measures could help protect lives. And I think that's why we think it is very much a health issue. And the more we steer away from talking about this as a political or gun control issue, the better off we'll be. Because to your point, changing the culture is very difficult and doesn't necessarily need to be the focus here. If we focus on the safety and the resources, we could make huge inroads in that in itself.
On a personal level, your background in training in journalism, how does that inform what you're doing in this role? Is storytelling an important tool that you're using?
Yeah, I think storytelling is an incredibly important tool. The victims of gun violence, there are so many untold stories there. You know, we often focus on mass shootings and so on, but, you know, day in and day out, people in different communities from different walks of life are suffering because of firearm injury or gun violence. And I think it's critical that we continue to tell those stories because that is the real impact of gun violence in America today. And those stories often get lost. They often don't make the headlines. And unfortunately, they're kind of becoming just, we're all developing a sense of normalcy to them, but they affect people. And I think that is also a driving factor for a lot of the things that I personally am passionate about, is hearing those stories, listening to folks, what they're going through. That is kind of what, you know, what makes all of us want to better our communities. And so, yeah, I think it's a critical element.
Well, before I let you go, I just want to ask you on behalf of our listeners who may be providers in their own practice or others in the healthcare industry, what can they do within their communities, within their practices to be part of this effort at gun violence prevention?
You know, there are so many resources and organizations they can reach out to or partner with if they're interested. We'll also share our website at Northwell Health for the Center for Gun Violence Prevention. We're always looking for collaboration and to work with others as well. And what I would say as a provider is that, you know, if you haven't already, there are resources that we can help you find or that you can even just search for on the internet that help educate yourself about firearm safety, how to counsel patients, what the right questions are, what the resources are. And in a relatively easy fashion, you'll be able to start screening for injury risk and start having that conversation with parents. And I think every conversation matters. Every conversation can save a life and really continue to move this in the direction of a public health issue, which is what we all kind of want to do.
Great. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us here on Healthcare Confidential, Dr. Chetan Sathia. And I know there are resources on the Northwell Health Center for Gun Violence Prevention website, which we will be listing in the show notes. So if you're interested in that, please check on the show notes and you'll have that information. I want to remind listeners that new Healthcare Confidential episodes are available on heliumradio.com. on Mondays at 10 a.m. on the Care One Network and at 2 p.m. on the Life Improvement Radio Network. You can listen on demand wherever you access podcasts. Our show is produced by Life Improvement Media with thanks to Eric Rummel and Justin Ulrich. Our theme song is an original composition written and performed by Patrick Bukarsik. Before we go, I also want to remind listeners that the 5th annual Toolkit for Independence, a virtual conference dedicated to the success of America's independent doctors, will be held on March 25th from 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Secure your free guest ticket or join us as a sponsor. Learn more at toolkitforindependence.com. That's toolkitforindependence.com. And if you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and leave us your feedback and help us continue the conversation on the Healthcare Confidential Facebook page. Be well, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Helium Radio. The views expressed by show hosts or their guests are their own and should not be construed in any way as advice from Helium Radio. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our website. Personal perspectives expressed by the producers, writers, and editors will always be presented as such. Any rebroadcast or retransmission without the express written consent of Helium Radio is strictly prohibited. Thanks for listening.